This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Run with Philip C. And I'm Wong Xiaoning. It's 8:35, Monday, December 20th. But for now, let's talk about the Sarawak state elections, which some of us in the Klang Valley might have missed because I think we were all very preoccupied with the tragic pictures that we saw. But as we know, the 12th Sarawak state elections just concluded over the weekend, and GPS has won big by bagging 75 out of 82 seats contested, while PSB won 4 and DAP managed to clinch only 2.
Yes, but due to COVID restrictions, turnout was low and live canvassing of votes was reduced over the 12 days campaign period, which was bad news for the opposition. Pakatan Harapan suffered a huge setback with its mainstay DAP crushed, while PKR was completely wiped out. In the 2016 state election, DAP had won 7 seats, while PKR won 3. So what does this major win for GPS mean for Sarawak moving forward? And how does this affect politics at the federal level?
To give us those answers, we have on the line with us Dr. James Chin, Professor of Asian Studies at the University of Tasmania. Good morning, James. And this time you were really right because it was a landslide win for GPS. But was this 75-seat majority expected? I mean, they even managed to win 5 seats from the opposition. What were the reasons for this?
Sure. Good morning. Just a very quick correction. It's actually 76 seats.
76?
So they won 76. Yes, they won 76 out of 82. But before I answer your questions, maybe I do a very quick top takeaways from the elections that will place the elections in a proper context. The first one, of course, is that everyone is very excited or everyone is curious that the DAP was a major loser in this election, that they lost heavily in the Chinese majority areas or the urban areas. In fact, that is actually not true, because what happened in the DAP is that quite a number of the seats they lost, not because the Chinese were not supporting them, but because there were opposition disunity. In other words, other opposition parties split their vote. So you can quickly look at 2 seats, Pujut in the town of Miri and Bukit Asat in Cebu. In both those 2 seats, PSB and PBK pulled away thousands of votes for the DAP. So that's the reason why they lost. So even though turnout was low, most of the Chinese, if you were to say that on average, they will still support the DAP. But because of the split in the opposition, the DAP lost a major portion of the seats. The second key takeaway is, of course, the secessionist vote. Everyone's very interested at what happened to parties like PBK, Aspirasi. They were making a hell lot of noises during the campaign, talking about taking Sarawak out of the Malaysian Federation. So how come they lost all their seats? PBK, despite putting out 73 candidates, second largest cohort of candidates after GPS, all the candidates lost, including the party president, and 90% of the candidates lost the deposit. The short answer is that they lost heavily because people were very afraid. I think if you were to scratch the surface, people were very afraid that if PBK had formed the government, then the federal government will immediately declare a state of emergency. They'll fly troops in from the rest of Malaysia and put Sarawak under martial law. So in other words, people understood that it is not possible for any of these parties to take power because the federal government will intervene. So don't forget, right, people have long memories. They remember the federal government imposing emergency in Sarawak in the mid-1960s to get rid of the first chief minister of Sarawak. So they understood this and they were afraid. But of course, they didn't say any of this during the election campaign. The third was a structural problem. As I mentioned before the election, I expected the turnout to be low, but it was really, really low in the urban areas. In some of the urban areas, the turnout was, less than 50%. And also the new SOP really killed off the opposition campaign in the urban areas. So for the DAP, they could not hold things like big rallies. So that really put a real damper onto the campaign. The other important takeaway, of course, is that, there's no place for Malayan parties going forward. So you can see that, other than the DAP, right, all the other parties, 80 of them, all the 80 seats won by Sarawak parties. So this means going forward, there's really no place for Malayan parties. Another key takeaway, of course, is that GPS now in such a strong position can demand almost everything from the federal government. one of the things that was really, really important but underreported was that when the Prime Minister visited Sarawak and also the Bersatu President, the ex-Prime Minister visited Sarawak, both of them made it very clear that they will not interfere in Sarawak affairs. In other words, it'll come up GE15, you know, basically they'll leave Sarawak to the Sarawakians. And I think the final thing I want to say is that I'm very, very pleased that PAS was unable to win in Sarawak, despite the fact that they pour all their resources to a single seat. That PAS candidate lost, but he did manage to get back his deposit, which I was not very happy about. But anyway, and the final thing, of course, is that, you know, the overall takeaway from the Sarawak election is that we are seeing the unstoppable rise of Sarawak nationalism. So going forward, I think it will be very, very difficult for Malayan-based party to try to penetrate Sarawak.
Yeah, you know, one party that did quite well was PSB, isn't it? They took seats from both GPS and also from PKRDAP. What's their plan going forward? They will be the key opposition, right?
There's really no opposition to speak of. Like I said, you know, it's 76 versus 6. And the PSB, which was expected to do well, they were supposed to get double-digit numbers. They ended up with 4. So if you hold, you know, in the Dewan Undangan Negeri, if you have 76 seats, the opposition have only 6. Basically, can ignore the opposition. So there is no opposition in Sarawak. Abang Johari is the undisputed boss of Sarawak politics. He can do whatever he wants, and basically that's very bad for democracy. But hey, this is what the Sarawakians want.
And I want to spend a little bit of time on DAP. Like you said, it only retained 2 seats. And it wasn't necessarily due to the Chinese voters turning away from them, but maybe more due to the low turnout. But at the end of the day, is any heads going to roll for this?
In the normal circumstances, the heads are probably going to roll. So, for example, when DAP did very badly in the Malacca election, which was held just before Sarawak, the leader of the Malacca DAP voluntarily stepped aside. I don't expect that to happen in Sarawak. The leader of Sarawak's DAP is very well entrenched in his position. He's unlikely to go. And also the way he structured the Sarawak DAP, nobody can really challenge him unless he steps down voluntarily. They'll probably have some sort of apologies. They'll probably say some nice things to keep everyone happy. But by and large, I don't see him giving up power as the chairman of Sarawak DAP.
And, you know, keeping this to a cliche, 100 days, what do you think Tan Sri Abang Johari will do for his first 100 days as chief minister, re-elected?
Oh, that's very simple. Now that he's got a very strong mandate, he will make a lot of new demands on Putrajaya. He'll be looking for more money, more autonomy, more decentralization. That's from the federal side. In terms of state policies in the first 100 days, he will try to replace as many of those people, how should I say it politely, those people who did not agree with his ascension. Now that he's got a personal mandate, he'll try to put as many of his own people inside the state administration. And of course, he'll start pursuing his own pet project. Because as I said, there is no more opposition in the state government and there is no real opposition in the Council Negeri or the Dewan Undangan Negeri.
I'm curious, what are these pet projects?
So some of these pet projects that he wants to do is that he has made quite a number of announcements. He wants to set up a separate Sarawak airline. He's thinking of bringing monorail to Sarawak. Really, really big projects that cost billions and billions of dollars. But then he's got money, you see. The Sarawak state coffers have 30 billion ringgit sitting there. So no problems.
And let's take this conversation back to the federal level. I mean, is this pretty much ensures that GPS will deliver its side of the number of seats for GE15?
Not only that, right now GPS have 19 out of 31 parliamentary seats in Sarawak. GPS looks set to maintain the momentum. So in the next general election, if it will be held next year, I suspect GPS can easily get up to 25, 26 seats. So he's going to be in an even more powerful position.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Dr. James Chin, Professor of Asian Studies at the University of Tasmania. And yes, this Sarawak state election, the results for GPS was overwhelming, as Dr. James Chin corrected me, 76 seats out of the 82. I think there was one seat where the results came out rather late. But clearly, Tan Sri Abang Johari is in a very, very good position.
Undisputed leader. And a very interesting question we posed him about the 100 days. I think Abang Johari has a very clear intrigue what he wants to do. And his pet projects, very interesting as well.
Yeah. Airline for Sarawak, for example. But, you know, does this mean then that there'll be a lot more projects? Definitely, if it sounds like it.
I think so. And you know, this is all about the petroleum reserves that come up from Sarawak.
And MA63, right?
And MA63, right? So he has the ammunition, the political power and the will to do all this.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.